The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is sponsored by Klaviyo, the leading e-commerce marketing solution for email and SMS trusted by over 50,000 merchants. Why? Because they have a pretty amazing segmentation and customization engine built in to their marketing platform. It lets you send messages based on what your customers have done, what pages they've visited, how much they've spent with you, how much they're likely to spend with you over time with their very cool LTV prediction tool, what products they've purchased or haven't purchased. It's pretty incredible. And in a world where email inboxes are only getting more crowded, people are getting more ruthless, sending highly targeted messages is the only way you're going to be able to cut through the noise. And you can do that with Klaviyo. So if you want to make more money from your flows, from your efforts on email and SMS, check them out. You can start for free at klaviyo.com/ECF. That's klaviyo.com/ECF. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by OneClick Upsell, the largest and most popular upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 Shopify Plus stores. Man, it is hard to get people to your store these days, whether you're doing organic or whether you're trying to get down in the muck that is Facebook ads these days with the disaster that that has become. You want to take advantage when people actually show up. And if you give people a chance, 1 in 6 will spend more money with you if you send them a personalized, targeted, relevant upsell offer, which is what OneClick Upsell makes it super easy to do. You can do it pre-purchase, post-purchase, give them lots of different options. It makes it incredibly easy, and they've helped store owners generate over $200 million in additional revenue. So if you want a slice of that, and you want to get started, you can get started really quickly with them in just a few minutes, get your first upsell up and running, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And I'd say the number of people who have landed on the show via a cold pitch email over the course of the 8 years I've done it, I can probably count on one hand, maybe 3 fingers. But today's guest was one of those people. Jason Lee from the FBAflipper.com reached out and said, hey, I know the Chinese FBA market incredibly well. We sell a bunch of businesses in that space. If you'd like to talk about that and learn kind of the ins and outs of that market, let me know. And I said, you know, that sounds super interesting. And he did not disappoint. So Jason on the show today, we talk about what the market is like over there. Who is building FBA businesses in China? How are they different from the Western counterparts? We talk about fraud and black hat tactics. We talk about why, in his opinion too, a lot of Western FBA merchants still have a meaningful advantage over their Chinese counterparts, and as well as like how involved the government and Amazon are in fostering and trying to encourage people building FBA businesses over in China. So super fascinating, kind of a perspective I had not ever had before. So hopefully you find it interesting too. Jason, welcome to the podcast. Excited to dive in to you on this topic because it's something I think a lot of people don't have much perspective into. But you're a Chinese American, born in Boston. You understand Western culture really well, but you spent a lot of time in China. And so you understand that side of things exceptionally well too, right?
Correct. Yeah. Born, raised outside of Boston, went to university in Boston, and then actually spent quite a significant amount of time in China and that whole region.
Very cool. And so, you know, I kind of mentioned at the top at the FBA Flipper, you help Western Chinese FBA businesses do M&A for those. So buy and sell those. You understand the market really well. What kind of, I think most people listening, myself included, are totally ignorant to just, we know that there's a lot, you know, Chinese sellers have gotten to be pretty serious players in the Amazon game over the last few years. But what kind of infrastructure exists in China to help people learn the ropes over there and build their own e-commerce businesses? Like, is there an entire subculture like there is here in North America of conferences and trainings and, you know, traffic and conversion and online courses? And how much of that exists? I've heard rumors about, like, you know, Amazon actually running courses and training courses for people in China to run FBA businesses selling into the West. What's the culture like over, you know, in China for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I really don't think there's a good enough analogy in the Western world to fully understand how the scale and the emphasis behind the culture there. It's not, I know that LA has a huge community of Amazon sellers, I think because the port is there and it's pretty easy to get creative work done there. But in China and Shenzhen in particular, where I think vast majority, I would estimate probably 90% of the Amazon selling community is based purely in Shenzhen. there's government support behind it in a way that you just don't see in the Western world. Tax subsidies, industrial parks, subsidized rent that is cheap even by their standards. And so I remember going to hotels that are conferences that are sponsored or paid for by what the equivalent would be like the Chamber of Commerce. And yes, there are trainings every week, both by Amazon and these gurus, just like the West. Typically, they advertise it through WeChat. And, you know, Seller Central is completely in Chinese, so it's an easily accessible thing. And it's just, there's a scale to it that is unfathomable in the Western world. I remember going to Shenzhen for not the first time, but when I decided to move there. And I explained to my hostel owner what I did. And he's like, oh, I also sell on Amazon. And I'm like, what? Like a 23-year-old hostel owner sells on Amazon. Yeah. Like, let me show you my products. So he goes over to Amazon, logs in, and shows me not a business that I would consider selling, but it was just still kind of impressive that this 23-year-old who probably didn't go to university or anything was selling products on Amazon. It was these like gamer girl cute headphones. And then a few days later, I was at Starbucks and I overheard people start talking about Amazon PPC, some logistics issues, hiring and firing employees. And so I just had to, it's not common in Eastern culture to interrupt and just start talking to a stranger, but I just had to interrupt them and start talking to them. And they're like, oh, yeah, like we're doing Amazon stuff. And it just like blew my mind that you could go to a place and just walk into some area and then just start overhearing stuff about Amazon. Granted, it was all in Chinese. So if you don't speak Chinese, you would go all over your head. But then you do get some drops here and there, PPC, Amazon, which is Yamashun in Chinese. You know, if you go to Southeast Asia, you might see a foreigner. You might ask them what they do. And if they do something, they may have a chance. They might be doing FBA, but it's like, it's not like you go to a certain district of LA and there's just conference after conference after conference and people trying to sell you their business with logistics or accounting or you name it related to FBA. And the government's fully supporting this.
Dang. So it's exponentially, it's not even on par. It's exponentially more entrenched in the culture and the training in the society than it is in the West.
Absolutely. There's someone else out there, a Westerner whose name I'm forgetting right now, but he did like a YouTube vlog of walking through the big conference Amazon puts on every year in December. There's tens of thousands of Amazon sellers there. It's a scale unbelievable. It's
wow. So, I mean, people listening to this, I think predominantly Western audience, they've been watching the rise of Amazon FBA sellers over the last, you know, a handful of years. Actually, I was talking with someone else on the podcast yesterday. They mentioned that the number of FBA sellers are on Amazon is up about 70% now, which was, I thought it was, you know, 50 or maybe a little bit higher than that from a year and a half ago. But does that sound right to you? Like, have you heard, what are the stats you've heard on what percentage of sellers on Amazon FBA are from Asia?
Yeah. So I'm not sure if it's kosher to mention this, but there is another website there called Marketplace Pulse, and they have a statistics about like some X number of sellers on Amazon are based in China. I don't exactly know what number or where they get that from, because if you look at is it based on gross merchandise value or is it based on number of accounts? Because Chinese tend to have multiple accounts, which I'm sure we can talk about later. And then although they do a lot of maybe volume of sales, I've found that overall their profit margins are quite low. In part because if you're not in North America, even not just China, but anywhere outside of North America, you generally don't have to pay the corporate tax on your business. And so that saves you. But there are, I would say it is probably 50% of sellers are based in China. Granted, it's also overrepresented in certain categories and underrepresented in other categories. So for example, electronics and fashion, heavily dominated by Chinese, whereas you get to more esoteric categories or categories that Chinese themselves don't like have a thought about, for example, gardening equipment, and you get a lower skew or representation of them. I mean, so you'll still find Chinese, but it won't be as like overwhelming as in the Chinese category.
Yeah, interesting. What about Black Hat? I think we're talking about this a little bit before we started recording. Fairly or unfairly, Chinese sellers get have a reputation for employing a lot of black hat techniques, you know, paid reviews, shenanigans to try to get their listings higher. Is that fair? Like, is that a fair representation of, or at least more fair than Western sellers? What can you talk about in terms of like kind of some of the less kosher stuff that sellers are doing to get their listings pushed up?
Yeah, I mean, when I worked previously at Empire Flippers, I would just say that certain stereotypes about certain regions of the world get reinforced. Call me racist, but I think that it's not just Chinese. I mean, definitely a lot of Eastern Europeans too do a lot of black hat. But I think just based on the culture in Shenzhen, and then just add on top of that the volume, it does make it seem like Chinese more or less do get a reputation for it, which is not everyone, but of course, a significant percentage. So what are some of the things that you see? Of course, is the positive reviews for yourself, positive reviews on competitors to then report them, negative reviews. I would say I've noticed a huge shift in the attitude. When I was in Shenzhen in 2018, 2019, then left early 2020, when I said I help people sell their Amazon business, and like there are people asking, okay, what do you mean by selling Amazon business? They don't understand. I'll be like, oh, it includes your account, your trademark, your inventory, basically all the assets that add value to your business. And they're like, oh, you sell Amazon accounts. Can you help me with brushing? And for those who don't know, brushing is fake reviews. So it's like, can you help me with fake reviews? I'd be like, oh, no, that's not my business. I think you're misunderstanding things. Because the idea is that you get multiple accounts and then you have one main account. We call it the parent account for everyone who's familiar with FPA. And you call it child accounts. You do all the fake reviews on the child accounts. But the parent account is the one that actually owns the ASIN and brand registry. So the other ones are authorized to sell on it, kind of like authorized sellers on the platform of Amazon. And if those accounts get shut down for fake review manipulation, the ASIN itself is still safe. But I see a lot less of that than I did before. Like when I mentioned, okay, what we do for business, they understand it more. When we dig into, you know, there's review meta out there, fake spotter. If it's, you can kind of tell, okay, this grew too fast to be true, or these review quality seems, it's too good to be true. I would say I'm getting a lot more, not a lot more, it's a less black hat than before, less noticeable black hat. There is still some, like there was a seller the other day who Amazon changed their inventory restrictions a couple months ago so that it's based on the total account, the total number of, I think, units, not on a per ASIN basis, a per SKU basis. And somehow he'd increased his limit from 3,000 units to 30,000 units. And we're like, no, we can't take this. And they're like, oh, we can turn it off at any point. It's like, okay, turn it off and run it for 3 months and let's see if your account's still open. So it's a never ending cat and mouse game.
What is it? Why do you think you've seen a decrease in the amount of kind of black hat tactics, fake review and brushing? I didn't know it was called brushing, but yeah, that kind of stuff. Is Amazon starting to crack down on it more in China? Are people realizing that they're just playing with fire? Like what is it that's causing that? Because it doesn't seem like, you know, it seems like there'd be something that would have to be coming into play to curb that.
Yes, exactly. So before, Amazon would close down accounts and then people would just like appeal and submit a POA or plan of action to get it reinstated. But I think there was major pressure from, I remember a year ago, even my family here in the States were complaining, okay, the quality of products on Amazon and the experience has gone down. Because when Amazon opened the Pandora's box of Chinese sellers to shorten the supply chain, they also introduced all the, like brushing is a very common thing on the domestic internet and e-commerce, and it's a completely acceptable practice in that culture. So when that started having an effect on Amazon's brand, I think Amazon kind of had a wake-up call. And then on top of that, I think a lot of the media reports about knockoffs, and supposedly there's an FTC thing for Amazon that the fake reviews are a violation of Federal Trade Commission stuff. You know, it's misleading consumers. So that's when Amazon said, okay, we have to get serious about this, because even though it's not happening in the US, it's still on our platform and it's affecting us and the consumer experience. And so they had a huge serious shutdown, which I think is more or less over, but really started in April, May of this year, where they closed down and effectively killed some huge e-commerce brands such as Aki, RavPower, and you can search them. I think we'll call it like something Tree.
Are these all Chinese brands or just brands in general?
They all happen to be Chinese. And you know, as clever as the Chinese try to be with the multiple account situation where one gets shut down, it's not like Amazon can't link it back up and realize that you're selling on the same ASIN and everything. So there's supposedly, I've heard of an internal tool only available to Amazon Seattle and Amazon India. And this is kind of getting real to some conspiracy level stuff, but they can actually link together all of the accounts and brands that someone owns and then shut them down. So despite the fact that Aki probably had thousands of Seller Central accounts, they just have the nuclear button, red button to destroy it because they want to send a message to the sellers that like, we are serious about cracking down on this. And then since then, people have been a lot more like, we are not like, okay, let's stop doing this because it's too much risk, too much risk. And we actually, as a broker, were affected in some of our businesses. Their main accounts got shut down. So I think it's mostly over though, because we haven't heard much about more. We've heard some going down, but not as crazy of a rate as before. It was just a sent a message. And like all the appeals are not working. I think Amazon's really trying to send a message that this is the rules and you got to follow them.
As someone who sees FBA businesses on a daily basis, do you shop on Amazon? Like, do you buy stuff from Amazon FBA? I'm guessing the answer is nuanced. It's yes, some stuff, but like, how much do you shop on Amazon and what are the things you will buy and the things you absolutely won't buy?
Well, considering I mostly live in Taiwan, I actually don't buy stuff on Amazon, only when I come home. I will buy like some electronics or memory stuff, but those are only from the brands that I would trust or know, such as SanDisk. And it's not like some other random brand. So that's what I continue to buy on Amazon.
Got it. And who's building, like, and I'm also guessing, like most things, maybe a nuanced answer. Who are most of the people that are starting and running these FBA businesses in China? Are they factories? Are they online marketers? That kids in their basement? Are they moms and dads? Are like who's? And I'm guessing it's across a wide spectrum. But is it all over the board, or is there a concentration of like, if you're 25 or 30 and single in China, like this is the thing to do right now?
Yeah, I would say there are several archetypes. There's a volume to it, and I think a lot of them are probably 25 to 30 who really want to be able to afford an apartment in China, and it's really expensive. And so the only option that they see is to start an Amazon business. Most likely they won't succeed, but while they're trying, and because of the scale of China, they're going to bring down the prices for everyone, for the consumer, but also for the seller, the Western seller, it's not going to be the greatest experience. That's definitely a huge portion. But I would say the most successful ones either migrated from Taobao, which is the domestic e-commerce platform in China, or they were in the supply chain industry before. Like they used to do traditional import-export and help source for people who go on Alibaba. And then they kind of transitioned and realized, oh, wait, why am I sourcing for a Western seller selling on Amazon? I can do the same. And I would say those are the most successful. Now, I think there's a couple of interesting things. Not as many people are factories or manufacturers as you would think. You think China is going direct, manufacturer, consumer. We've encountered some of those businesses where it is the factory boss selling, but more often than not, the factory boss is a baby boomer generation. So 50s, 60s, they really hit it big in the 90s. Their mindset is volume. Customer tells me what they need, and I worry about raw material pricing and costs and labor coming in. They don't think about PPC strategy and optimum images. And if they do, they might have a separate department for it, or they might hire an outside agency who takes 20, 30% off the top, which is crazy. So I don't think it's, from what I talked to someone who was formerly with Amazon, who did the first party private label branding, private labels for Amazon, Amazon's own brands. I asked him that same question and he's like, yeah, no, most are not. Most sellers are not factories. Only maybe 20, 30% are actually factories. The rest are, most successful ones are usually in their 30s, mid 30s, who either did Taobao or supply chain. And then because there's some that came from supply chain, I would say, did sales and supply chain, especially those who maybe spoke English. I do notice there tends to be a lot more female sellers in the China market than what I generally see in the Western one. It's still majority male, but I do notice there's quite a number.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. If you're listening to this episode and enjoying it, then I've got to tell you about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands. The secret sauce, as the name implies, is that everyone inside, we vet everyone to make sure they have real-world experience running an e-commerce brand and struggle with the same kind of things that you do if that's the position you're in. And why is that important? Well, it means you get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. So if you've got somebody that HR issue and you're worried about letting someone go, but you're worried about a lawsuit or you're trying to figure out the best ERP to implement or maybe you're trying to understand marketing techniques, you can post a message to our form and get answers within hours, sometimes minutes, from experts who know this stuff. You get to plug into an amazing network of e-commerce entrepreneurs worldwide across the United States and the globe that you can connect with when you're traveling for meetups and get invites to member-only events like ECF Live. And then finally, you can avoid costly hiring and software mistakes by tapping into our review directory of over 10,000 reviews for agencies and e-commerce software tools. I mean, it's really hard to find unbiased reviews online right now. So often they're either paid for or they're affiliate links. All of our reviews are completely unbiased. So when you go down the road of hiring a new ad agency or looking for that new, ERP software, you have a lot more confidence that you're not going to be wasting the next 3 or 4 months of your life on an expensive project. So if that sounds interesting to you, come join us. You can learn more and apply ecommercefuel.com, and we'd love to have you inside. All right, let's get back to the discussion. Well, you had mentioned, tons of people doing this, obviously, massive increase in the number. But you had mentioned too to me that you're pretty optimistic, or at least reasonably optimistic, for Western sellers, despite the massive rise in the number of Chinese sellers. Why is that? Like, what do Chinese, and some of these I'm guessing are fairly obvious, but I'd be curious to get your thoughts, your nuanced thoughts on them. What are Chinese FBA sellers, what do they do well? And what do they have a really hard time replicating when selling to Western customers?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that people do kind of fear this, oh my God, the yellow peril taking over on the Amazon side. I do think the equilibrium of where it is is probably where it's going to be in terms of proportion of Chinese sellers versus proportion of Western sellers. Because Western sellers have an advantage in the sense that they understand the end consumer a lot more and they understand what looks professional and what looks correct. Whereas the mindset of Chinese, I don't want to say it's completely like this, and it is slightly stereotypical, but true, that they look at competitors and try to just copy competitors. And that is their reference. But if there's something that hasn't been already done in Amazon, they don't have the expansion to check out other platforms or other sources of inspiration for how to do things. They can only copy what they've seen. There is like some innovation that can happen with the products and the customer reviews. But for the most part, I think that's where a Westerner can stand out. And a Chinese just has a huge advantage in supply chain, whether that be sourcing for the product costs or freight costs. And it's not worth competing with them on that. If your product cost is an extra 6 RMB or about $1, don't worry about getting that last dollar squeezed out unless your product price is really low, but just focus on going for something premium.
And you had mentioned you recommended, or potentially there's some less competition, obviously, if you're selling in categories that sellers are not. You mentioned a couple of them earlier. Can you mention maybe a little bit more exhaustive list, maybe 5 to 10 of the most, some of those categories?
Yeah, sure. So if you're trying to think about categories that where your competition might be a little lower, think about what is unique about the US in terms of products. So what does that mean? It's like a Chinese generally lives in the city, so they don't have a yard. They don't think about gardening. So that's something where you see less Chinese in. Whereas something indoors or related to, say, like a phone or fitness, pretty heavily dominated by those. So if it's also a lot of Chinese, although they might have a car, they don't have the same level of affection, or it's not as part of their life as it is for an American.
Man, nobody loves cars like us Americans.
Yeah, that's for sure. So those are kind of examples of categories where you'll probably experience less having to deal with Chinese, I should say.
Got it. And who's buying? I mean, you guys specialize in buying and selling Chinese FBA businesses. Who's buying Chinese FBA businesses? Are most of your transactions Chinese seller to Chinese buyer? Are you shifting ownership of businesses that came up and were created in China over to Western sellers? Like who's buying most of them?
Yeah. And actually I'll go over that. And before that, I think to understand what's a little unique about the Chinese market and why you kind of in this market have a broker is because there's just so many differences in the ecosystem behind it. As I mentioned before, the government support and who are the influencers, or as they say in China, KOLs, key opinion leaders. The second thing is the internet. So there's actually, as you know, the Great Firewall of China. So we communicate with our sellers and work with them over WeChat, which is we send files back and forth. So it's nowhere nearly as organized as Slack. And then lastly, there's capital controls. So how do you actually get money into this to pay to the seller for a business when the yearly limit of currency is 50,000 USD into China per person? So there are ways around this, but like figuring it out on your own, good luck. And overall, I would say that it's for what Western buyers look for in a business, which is at least 20% margins, usually ideally 30 or 40% margins, and hero SKUs or high concentration in just a few SKUs, you get less of that on Chinese stores. You get a lot more general shops who just throw stuff up and see what happens and don't segment a brand out of one account. And so overall in the market, it's like for every 10 Chinese sellers, maybe only one or two are a decent fit for buyers. Whereas on the Western side, my experience, you talk to 10 FBA sellers, you might get one or two that are still doing the old wholesale arbitrage model. But for the majority of it, maybe 8 out of 10, they're a decent fit. And so it's diminishing returns into the China market. And you really have to have these good systems to filter a lot of it. So who do we see buying these Chinese businesses from us? There is actually a couple Chinese aggregators out there. And then majority of demand comes from Western aggregators, North America and Europe. And I think it's because on the Western seller side, there's so much competition for them and multiples are so high that they're looking to go to China to try to find sellers. And we know that, you know, the biggest name in the industry for acquisitions, they have gone quite heavily into China. But at the same time, despite being there for, I don't know, almost 9 months now, they've only closed 3 businesses out of their whole portfolio of 140. So
are you talking about Thrasio in terms of that?
Yeah. Yep. So they're good for us because they help educate the market and spend a lot of money. So we talk to people, we can act like, hey, we can get you access to all these other aggregators who don't have China operations. It's symbiotic, I would say. I'm not sure if symbiotic for them, but we do give them some businesses too here and there.
Are the multiples pretty much the same between Chinese and Western sellers? Like if you're looking to sell a Chinese business versus a Western FBA business, all things equal, are multiples the same or is there a disparity?
I would say there is a risk discount given on Chinese businesses a little bit. And Chinese generally don't trust any earnout. I mean, how can you, all of these aggregators who are promising a year, even 2 year earnouts, but they haven't even been around for more than a year, it's really hard to believe them. And especially in a place that has low trust like China, it's all about upfront payment. But for a buyer, you know, we work with escrow and legal in the US. So it's we try to make it fair for everyone.
You mentioned that, you know, the currency controls, and I knew there were some currency controls. I didn't know it was quite as severe as 50K per year as your maximum per person limit to bring currency in. How do you, if somebody sells their Chinese FBA business to somebody in the West and they need to wire them $500,000, it sounds like you can't do that. So how do you get around that? Like, are you muling in gold bars into them? Like, I mean, through Tibet, like what's the, how do you do this?
Yeah. So I'm not sure if I can say that on the call. That's kind of unique to us, how we do it. It's kind of a trade secret.
Got it. Fair enough.
Sorry to kill your question on that one, but.
No, it's all right. So I'm just going to assume the gold bars with donkeys is probably what you guys do.
Okay. bags of rice.
Bags of rice. Very heavy bags of rice. So if you are a Westerner, like why
buy Chinese?
Yeah. Like what, when I think about, you know, when somebody's looking to buy a business and you kind of alluded to at the top or not the top, but earlier in the conversation about how, yeah, just there's some cultural differences that makes it harder for Chinese sellers to sell to the West, just as if you were a Western seller trying to sell to China. Like, kudos to a lot of them, a lot of the sellers, because man, I don't think I would do super well selling into the Chinese market on FBA. I think I would be a grade A+ flop. But anytime you buy a business, it's always nice if you can find spots for immediate value. Is it, You know, if you're a Westerner, is it safe to say that if you buy a Chinese FBA business, you can potentially go through, there's a lot of, not always, but oftentimes room for value adds in terms of cleaning up copy, images, some of those cultural things that maybe weren't being, you know, as well polished as before. And so if you get a business that's doing decently well, you might be able to even accelerate that. And if so, what are some of the other ones that, you know, why should Westerners be buying Chinese FBA businesses?
The branding on Chinese businesses is generally quite terrible. So that's generally the opportunity. Better images, better copy. We saw one, it was a two-parent ASIN. I think there was maybe 8 or 10 child ASINs total. And it looked very Chinglishy, but you wouldn't believe it was doing $100,000 in profit in this pet category, just the 8 child ASINs. So, and when you look at it, you're like, yeah, it's definitely, a lot of words are misspelled. They don't even have EBC, enhanced brand content. It's mostly opportunities for branding are where it is when you buy a Chinese business. You don't have to worry about optimizing on supply chain or optimizing economies of scale in terms of freight because the Chinese sellers already figured it out. So that's the plus side of buying one.
Got it. Which is going to be fairly easy for a lot of people to spot in the West. Is there, what are the difficulties involved with transferring, you know, like transferring account from someone from a Chinese account to an American account or a, you know, North American or Canadian or European, whatever it is? Is it complex handing it over given the international kind of differences or not really?
No, I mean, we do an asset sale, so we don't try to sell the Chinese legal company behind it. The only time we've done that as an exception is when we did a sale to the Chinese aggregator in China, and that would actually made things easier for us, especially transferring European sides that are a bit more risky. But on US side, like if it's Amazon.com and it's asset sale, it's you just do the same system as you do it for a Westerner. You notify Amazon, we're changing, the legal entity behind the business has sold, and so we need to change on the information. Amazon gives the go-ahead, remove some flags. You go in there, change everything, don't log in for 24 hours, and then good to go from there. I will say, though, that because Amazon went quite heavy on their support of Chinese sellers on Amazon, Seller Central, there is an unfortunate thing that if you take over a Chinese business, all the notifications, whether it be like performance notifications for ads or customer support, defaults to Chinese. And so that could be kind of annoying. So if you're annoyed with seller support with a canned response to a Filipino or an Indian, well, you might want that over, you know, what you get with Chinese characters in the response.
You can actually read it. Yeah, it's always a perk. Well, Jason, amazing. Love the insights. It's so cool getting your perspective. It's one that I have zero insight into. So thank you for letting me grill you. And if people are interested in, of course, you guys, the whole reason for the talk here is you guys specialize in selling Chinese FBA businesses. If someone is listening, is interested in that, wants to get in touch, learn more about it, thefbaflipper.com. Is that the best place to get in touch with you and connect?
Yes, it is. My email and phone number is right there to reach out.
Perfect. Well, great. Well, thank you, sir. It was amazing hearing everything about this world. And yeah, thanks so much for coming on and sharing.
Thank you for having me on.
Thanks so much for listening. And the fact that you made it to the end of the episode tells me you're probably someone interested in this stuff and might be a really good fit for the e-commerce fuel community. Our community is the world's largest group of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce store owners and offers a value-packed form, dynamic live events, and much more. If that sounds interesting at all, you should learn about membership and how to apply at ecommercefuel.com. Big thank you to our two sponsors. Supercharge your email marketing efforts with Klaviyo, the world's best email and SMS marketing engine at klaviyo.com/ECF. And also one-click upsell from Zipify Apps, where you can rapidly increase your average order value by offering powerful targeted upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Finally, thanks to Sherelle Torrecampo for helping produce the show. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.